are not seeking a new Cold War.
President Biden addresses the UN General Assembly. It's Wednesday, September 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, documentary follows Afghan youth. Geopolitical challenges facing Germany. Calling for a ban on donkey slaughtering. Vaccine mandates in LA schools. Fixing broken gadgets for free. It's all on today's VOA Asia. In his first address as U.S. President to the United Nations General Assembly, Joe Biden opened by addressing the challenge and loss facing the world from COVID-19, and he appealed to delegates to address climate change.
Will we work together to save lives, defeat COVID-19 everywhere, and take the necessary steps to prepare ourselves for the next pandemic, for there will be another one? Or will we fail to harness the tools at our disposal as the more virulent and dangerous variants take hold? Will we meet the threat of challenging climate, the challenging climate we're all feeling, already ravaging every part of our world with extreme weather? Or will we suffer the merciless march of ever-worsening droughts and floods, more intense fires and hurricanes, longer heat waves and rising seas? Will we affirm and uphold the human dignity and human rights under which nations in common cause more than seven decades ago formed this institution?
Biden says the world stands at an inflection point in history and called for diplomacy.
We are not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks. The United States is ready to work with any nation that steps up and pursues peaceful resolution to shared challenges, even if we have intense disagreements in other areas, because we'll all suffer the consequences of our failure.
Biden delivered the speech after the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and a new deal with Australia and the United Kingdom that has angered France, one of America's oldest European allies.
The world today is not the world of 2001, though. And the United States is not the same country we were when we were attacked on 9/11 20 years ago. Today, we're better equipped to detect and prevent terrorist threats, and we are more resilient in our ability to repel them and to respond. We know how to build effective partnerships to dismantle terrorist networks by targeting their financing and support systems, countering their propaganda, preventing their travel, as well as disrupting imminent attacks. We'll meet terrorist threats that arise today and in the future with a full range of tools available to us, including working in cooperation with local partners so that we need not be so reliant on large-scale military deployments.
Biden will host other world leaders at a virtual COVID-19 summit on Wednesday. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Lawyer says U.S. journalist in Myanmar jail seems disheartened. EU rallies behind Macron as dispute among France, Britain, and U.S. worsens. Regional extremists energized by Taliban takeover could pose threat to Pakistan and China interest, expert says. How a Western military pact for nuclear subs affects China. After Merkel, what role will Germany have on global stage? Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Wednesday. The Taliban announced a list of deputy ministers on Tuesday, failing to name any women, despite an international outcry when they presented their all-male cabinet ministers earlier this month. My childhood, my country, 20 years in Afghanistan, is the latest documentary by award-winning filmmakers Phil Grabsky and Shoaib Sharifi. Grabsky spoke with VOA's Penelope Pulu about this 20-year film expose on life in Afghanistan through the eyes of an Afghan youth from his early childhood to today.
Phil Grabsky's lens starts following young Mir's life since U.S. and allied forces invaded Afghanistan in 2001 after the September 11 attacks. Months before the 9/11 attacks on the United States in 2001, the Taliban had destroyed the Buddhas of Bamiyan in Afghanistan, one of the most significant archaeological sites in the world. Grabsky flew to Kabul to chronicle how these events were affecting the embattled country. While touring the ruins, he met young Mir and his family living in caves in abject poverty.
That energy, that vivacity, that inquisitiveness, I suddenly thought, of course, the film is what will happen over the next year in this young boy's life. Because that then projects the audience forwards, thinking about the future of Afghanistan.
Gradually, says Grabsky, Mir's boyish exuberance and optimism faded under the weight of poverty and family responsibilities. After years in front of the camera lens, Mir, now a father of two, has taken up the camera himself, working as a cameraman in Kabul. On May 31st, 2017, a bomb exploded in Kabul, killing more than 250 people and injuring hundreds. The blast missed Mir by mere luck.
We would have to check under the wheel arches of our cars every single journey because the Taliban were employing and ISIS were putting sticky bombs and blowing up journalists and judges and election officials. I mean, it's horrific, horrible.
Grabsky says recently he has not been to Afghanistan. It is no longer safe for Westerners to film there. His Afghan co-director, Shoaib Sharifi, has continued filming there, but even for him, it is not safe.
I've met lots of courageous and brave women, but the Afghan women are something else, you know, and even now they're out demonstrating. Unbelievable. They deserve our wholehearted support.
Grabsky says, "My childhood, my country, 20 years in Afghanistan, is a labor of love spanning almost 20 years. It chronicles the forces that shape Afghanistan and its people."
And it's very beautiful to look at. It's dramatic. It's funny. And above all, I think it gives you a real insight into the type of person that's currently queuing at the airport or arriving in your town.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Still ahead on VOA Asia, geopolitical challenges, namely China, await Germany's new leader. Happening now in Asia, Taiwan is mulling the removal of a prominent statue of former President Chiang Kai-shek in what is described as a reflection on its authoritarian past. But the proposal has drawn mixed reactions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Germany is preparing to elect a new leader in elections scheduled September 26th, as incumbent Chancellor Angela Merkel's 16 years in power come to an end. As Henry Ridgewell reports from Berlin, her successor will face a series of immediate geopolitical challenges, from the rise of China to balancing transatlantic relations.
Hamburg, Germany's biggest port, handles more than 8.5 million containers every year. Almost a third are shipped to and from China, four times more than second-placed the United States. And Beijing has its eyes on this critical part of Germany's infrastructure. Chinese state-owned shipping firm COSCO wants to buy a third of the shares in the container port. The port's owners and the mayor support the deal, saying it's vital for Hamburg's growth. But critics say Germany should be wary. Jürgen Hart is a lawmaker with the ruling Christian Democrats Party.
In China, business plans are not mainly the reason to do business, but political decisions of the Communist Party. Therefore, we should look very carefully on that such a deal. I would prefer to have a change of shares between Hamburg Harbour and maybe Shanghai Harbour.
But China does not allow foreign companies to own its infrastructure. Germany's geopolitical dilemma echoes that of Hamburg. Is China friend or foe? In recent years, tensions have grown over Beijing's treatment of its Muslim Uyghur population, the crackdown on democratic rights in Hong Kong, and military expansion in the South China Sea. Germany has found itself caught in the middle, says analyst Liana Fix.
Europe and the European Union is undecided about which way to pursue. On the one side, they feel the pressure from the United States. On the other hand, there are also economic interests, especially for member states that are highly dependent on trade with China.
Germany's leadership could be out of step with the population, according to a recent poll, says analyst Liana Fix of the Korber Stiftung Foundation of International Affairs in Berlin.
We asked the German public to what extent they would support sanctions towards China, even if it hurts their economy, for human rights issues, for human rights violations. And there the majority of Germans said they would support sanctions against China.
With Russia too, Germany finds itself caught between East and West. Despite Russia's 2014 invasion of Ukraine, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has pushed ahead with the construction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which was completed this month. It will carry Russian gas directly to Germany, bypassing Ukraine, which has until now benefited from lucrative transit fees. Ukraine's president recently offered Merkel this blunt warning.
I believe that this Nord Stream 2 is a weapon. I believe that not to notice that this is a dangerous weapon, not only for Ukraine, but for the whole of Europe, is wrong.
The United States also opposes the pipeline and has imposed sanctions on Russian companies involved. Again, Liana Fix.
The strong opposition from the United States has to some extent led to a reaction in Germany, which said, okay, why is the United States getting involved in our energy policy?
Navigating global affairs won't be easy for Germany's next leader, says analyst Gero Neugebauer, a professor of political science at the Freie University in Berlin. He said the majority of people see that Germany is currently in a crisis situation. Globalization is at play, the war in Afghanistan, conflict in Europe, the question of what impact globalization has on jobs, migration and climate change. Merkel's successor will have either limited international experience or none at all.
Entweder geringe internationale Erfahrung oder keine.
Merkel sought compromise and dialogue. How will her successor balance Germany's drive for prosperity with competing global rivalries? The world will be watching closely as Europe's biggest economy prepares for a new era. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Berlin.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Police said Tuesday that 44 people were arrested as hundreds of demonstrators marched in the streets of Melbourne, Australia's second largest city, against mandatory coronavirus vaccine rules in the construction industry. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Donkey owners in Kenya are demanding a permanent ban on the slaughter of the animals after a court lifted a temporary ban earlier this year. They say their donkeys are being stolen and killed to meet a demand for beauty products and so-called medicine in China. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
Kinampet Sampare is taking stock of his remaining herd of donkeys, making sure none have been taken. He says he did not worry about losing his animals a year ago during a government order that shut down donkey slaughterhouses. But since July, six of his donkeys have disappeared from his land. Sampare is convinced it's because the temporary ban on donkey slaughter was lifted in May, allowing the meat and hides to be sold again to Asian markets. He says when the donkey factory was closed, the theft had stopped. It had stopped because since then, no donkey was lost until recently when six of my donkeys were stolen and my neighbor's two donkeys. Tens of thousands of donkey owners like Sampare are demanding a fresh and permanent ban on donkey slaughter in Kenya. In a petition, some 30,000 owners from 28 counties said their animals are vulnerable to theft from poachers. They say once stolen, the donkeys are being slaughtered for use in beauty products and so-called medicine sold in China. Animal rights groups are calling for a regional ban on donkey slaughter. Josiah Ojuang is the program manager of one of such groups, the Animal Welfare Africa Network.
We also had a chance as ANAO and as members of the Association of Donkey Welfare Organizations in Kenya this year to discuss with members of EALA, the East Africa Legislative Assembly, the need to have this removed not just from Kenyan laws, but all over East Africa. Because the moment you allow donkey slaughter in Tanzania and you stop it in Kenya, the donkeys will move across the border and come.
Kenyan authorities have appealed a court ruling in May that lifted the previous ban. That decision is due in October. In the meantime, the principal secretary at the State Department of Livestock, Harry Kimtai, told VOA that Kenya is not allowing the donkey slaughterhouses to operate without a valid purpose, such as disposing of donkeys that have naturally died.
Yes, it has been lifted by the court, but in terms of administrative, we feel that we cannot just go by what the court has said. We said we have no problem. We have not stopped them from slaughtering, but we are saying our inspectors will not inspect. And until you show us evidence that you are in the production systems of donkeys and therefore there is need for you to slaughter.
National figures show in 2019 there were an estimated of 1.7 million donkeys in Kenya. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Making headlines in Asia, eight hatchlings from one of the world's rarest crocodile species have been found in a wildlife sanctuary in eastern Cambodia, raising hopes for the continuing survival of Siamese crocodiles in the wild. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the Los Angeles Unified School District will require all students over the age of 12 to be fully vaccinated by January if they want to attend school, making it the largest school district in the U.S. to issue such a mandate. Angelina Bagdasarin talked to experts and residents about the mandate. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Schoolgirls Zaina and Sarah happily welcomed the news that the Los Angeles Unified School District will require all students over the age of 12 to be fully vaccinated by January if they want to attend school.
To prevent everyone to get COVID and I don't know, I think we should get rid of COVID as soon as possible. So I'm vaccinated, everyone in my family is vaccinated.
I feel like it's better for people's health.
Starting from January 2022, school children in the Los Angeles Unified School District will only be able to attend school if they show proof of vaccination. That will make it the largest school district in the nation to issue such a mandate.
This is a tough decision on multiple fronts. It is easy to wait for someone to tell us what to do. LA Unified is leading because we must. Our communities cannot wait.
The mandate will affect 225,000 school children from grade 6 through 12. Local authorities report that many children over 12 have already gotten their shots, but some 80,000 children remain unvaccinated. A large proportion of parents support the new mandate.
I think it is good. It's good for them because it's more security vaccinated than not.
Others, however, strongly oppose the new rules.
I do not support it. I don't think there's enough research yet to really understand what the effects are. I'm not anti-vaccine by any means. I just think we need a little bit more research.
Those who oppose mandatory vaccinations for school children are also fighting against the face masks regulation that is currently in place in California. All school students and staff must wear face masks at school and take a weekly COVID test. Infectious diseases professor at UCLA, Timothy Brewer, believes, however, that soon the vaccination will be mandatory not only for children over 12, but also for younger children, once it is approved by scientists.
Studies are ongoing right now to look at children younger than 12 and vaccine protection and safety in these age groups. I think once we have those data, then we'll see mandates for younger children as well.
Brewer believes other school districts around the country will soon follow Los Angeles and make vaccinations for school children mandatory. For Angelina Bogdasaran in Los Angeles, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Finally on VOA Asia, instead of throwing away broken gadgets, repair enthusiasts encourage people to try fixing their own things with Fix-It clinics and free tutorials. Matt Dibble reports.
When the timer that Myra Silverman uses to turn on lights in her home broke, she could have replaced it for about $12. Instead, she brought it to a Fix-It clinic.
We all ought to be able to fix our things rather than just throwing them away.
Also here tonight, a toaster, a Laserdisc player, and a pepper grinder. Peter Mui has been running free workshops like this one since 2009. Motivated by the decline of repair shops and the growth of what he says is a throwaway culture.
The issue that we're all facing right now is that our consumption is killing the planet. Something is broken about the way that we are constantly bringing these new items into our lives.
The clinic supplies tools and volunteer coaches.
Most of the stuff that we get presented with, we can fix. We have a 70% repair rate on average.
But repair advocates like Kyle Weens say their work is getting harder, because manufacturers withhold repair information and parts.
It used to be every product came with instructions of how to take it apart. These days, unfortunately, they don't. So we take things apart, figure out how to fix them, write instructions, put them online, and make it easy for the next person.
To help promote home repair, Weens founded iFixit, a website that shares free repair instructions.
We have over 75,000 guides. We'll show you how to fix your vacuum or your bicycle, your toaster, your phone. Pretty much anything that would break in your house, we probably got a useful repair guide for it.
I hope so, yes!
Back at the Fix-It clinic, some will be going home victorious, while others will live to fix another day. But all should take home some new skills and knowledge. Matt Dibble for VOA News, Oakland, California.
Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Doug Bernard. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Enjoy the day. You take care now.